John, you helped found FTP software. You worked at Epilog, and you've spent much of your career deep in the bowels of the protocol stack, doing a lot of low-level coding. And your new company, Elf Communications, is looking at higher-level issues. I know you can't discuss details of what the products are that you're developing, but can you give us a bit of a vision of what's missing in applications on the networks, what you'd
Sure.
like to see?
Sure. Many of the people in the IETF here have been working on protocol stacks and routing protocols and security protocols and all this for years and years and years. I've written way more protocol stack implementations than I ever want to. I never want to write another one. I think I've learned just about everything I can or want to learn by writing them. I think that if you look at the people who are using the Internet today and the people who will be using the Internet as time goes on, that what you're going to find is they really don't care what's going on there. You know, to them, it's like whether their disk uses a SCSI interface or an ST interface or something like that. What they care about is the price and the reliability characteristics, and more than that, they care what they can do with it. That's why I think you're seeing more applications like things like Gopher and Waze and the World Wide Web showing up. Some things that I think are particularly important are that there's an awful lot of complexity involved in both running an internet site and using an internet site. And you know, things like IP addresses and domain names, those are great for us, you know, for computer geeks. You know, we go and we say, oh yeah, 192.48.232.17. Yeah, that's a class C address. I know what class C addresses are about, right?
Not only that, I know who owns it.
Yeah, right. Right. And if I don't, I can find out, and I know how to find out. Doctors don't care, and they shouldn't have to care. You know, I don't think that they should have to care. To be honest, I'm tired of caring about that. You know, I have a certain capacity in my brain, and I'd really actually like to use some of it for things other than remembering how dotted IP addresses work and things like that. You know, I need to know that because of my line of work. And to be honest, I do enjoy playing with it, and it's a nice toy, you know, and I have a lot of fun with it. But a lot of the world doesn't care. And I think that a lot that they need and they deserve tools to assist them with dealing with that sort of stuff, hiding that sort of complexity. And some of this is simply user interface technology. You know, user interfaces to a lot of existing TCP/IP software are horrible. And the reason why, I think, is because they're not horrible to the people who wrote them, and they're not horrible probably to you or to me. That's because we understand what's going on at a deep level inside the software. You know, we know how protocol stacks work. We know how our routing works. We know how IP addresses work. You know, we realize that you type ftp.elf.com and it comes back and says host unknown. We probably can't talk to the domain name server. Okay, I remember the IP address. I'll type that in. You know, we understand what's going on there. For other people, they shouldn't have to understand that. And
is it a matter of just new software? Do we just need a higher level interface to FTP, or do we need a better file transfer protocol?
I think we need both. You know, there are certainly valid cases today where you still. I don't think I want to say that you should never have to interact with FTP. I think I do want to say that you shouldn't have to interact with it as much as you do now. You know, I'd like to see tools out there that would automatically invoke FTP for you. And, for instance, Gopher will automatically FTP files for you. That's great. That's one of the wonderful things. In that case, FTP's still there. It's an important protocol, but everything going on with it is going on under the covers, and the user doesn't know that that's going on there. And I think that's really important. What the user cares about is getting the file, whether that file was sent via electronic mail, whether it came over FTP, or whether it was accessed via NFS. It doesn't matter. The user really doesn't care. There are different properties to those different methods of accessing the file, though, and the user may care about some of those characteristics of it. You know, I think that if the user does have to deal with FTP, that there are certainly ways that we could improve the user interface to FTP. I can't say that I am one of the world's most enamored people most enamored of, say, the Microsoft Windows File Manager. You know, it's there, it's a file manager, it's a graphic user interface. Okay, I'll live with it most of the time, to be honest. I go to a DOS prompt and I type a command line instead of using the file manager. However, there's an awful lot of people who are used to the file manager and have a lot easier time dealing with it than they have dealing with a command line interface. And certainly an alternative type of user interface to an FTP client, say for Microsoft Windows, would be to provide something that looks like the file manager. You know, you do an FTP to the system, you get a window that pops up, it looks like the file manager, you can drag and drop just like the file manager, you can use menus just like in the file manager, use a toolbar just like that. And I wouldn't stand up and say that's the world's best user interface. I don't think there is such a thing as best user interface. User interface, it's like writing a book. You're talking to a certain audience. You write a user interface for a certain audience. You know, FTP command line user interface in 4. Whatever Berkeley Unix, that's great for a certain audience. It's awful for a certain other audience. The problem is that there's much more of that other audience than there is of the audience it's good for, and we've got to start dealing with that. Part of the reason why we got to start dealing with that is just the type of what the Internet can do for us, and the access to resources that the Internet can provide us, I think, is so great, you know, and what the world could be like if everybody could use the Internet, and if things like government records, data that the government collects, databases, everything could be on there. You know, that is so amazing that it would be criminal. And from my point of view of where the Internet could go, it'd be criminal to not try to make it available to everybody. One of the things I'm kind of worried about there is not only may the technology be unusable to a lot of people simply because of the way the interfaces to it are, but also it may be inaccessible, and I'm pretty worried about that. I don't want to see... Suppose something I'd really love to see is congressional voting records online. I'd love to find out how my senators voted, because I would love to go beat them up on it and make sure that they are actually representing me in Congress.
Well, you know, they are online. The Cleveland Freenet has the Congressional Memory Project. Not all records are online, but they take every week, they take a dozen bills and they enter in the voting records.
Okay.
And they're slowly building that over time.
That's great. I'm glad to hear about that. There's so many things going on around the Internet today that I cannot keep track of them all anymore. I try. I need a box to read my net news for me. That would help a lot.
And that's basically what your vision is of the type of software that you want to see, is things that'll help you do that?
Yeah, that's part of it. That's certainly part of it. There's a lot of data that's published that's pretty much unstructured. Part of the vision is tools to add structure to it that the user uses. Eventually, it's important that the structure be added by the people who publish the data as well. You know, that's another aspect of it. And it turns out that data you publish and you put structure on may not be structured in a way that's useful to me. So I still need tools to put my own structure on it, right? That's certainly part of it. More tools to assist me in finding that data, you know, not necessarily even putting structure on it so it's useful to me, you know, that like the voting records. Well, I just want to extract my senators' names and find out how they voted. I probably really don't want to read the text of the bill or anything like that. So I want tools to help me to do that. You know, but I also need to just find out that it's there in the first place. I don't want to have to deal with FTP to get it. I want to have a software agent that will go out and get it for me, you know, things like that. Those are all important aspects of it.
You have an unusual electronic mail address, asylum.sf.california.us, yet you live in Boston. Do you have a leased line that goes all the way to California to do your Internet access?
That would be pretty horrendous. I got a swamp in Florida, I could say, and I got a leased line that goes from Boston to San Francisco.
Well, you must work for a telephone company then. You can backhaul to San Francisco.
Yeah. I moved to San Francisco about San Francisco Bay Area about 5 years ago. And was talked into putting my host, Asylum, into the U.S. domain at that time. It seemed like a good idea. You know, I lived in Belmont, not in San Francisco, and a bunch of sites in the San Francisco area decided that what they really wanted was ba.ca.us, BA for Bay Area. But that wouldn't be granted because that didn't fit into the U.S. domain conventions. Okay, so that's okay. You know, we said, well, you know, we'll lie a little bit. We'll say San Francisco because I figured I wasn't going to live in Belmont for the rest of my life. You know, and it turns out I didn't. But instead of moving to San Mateo, I moved to Reading, Massachusetts, and now I've moved to Cambridge. I kept my domain name though. And the reason why is that my system moves several megabytes of mail a day. I have no idea what mailing lists it's on, you know, and I don't really want to have to go out and change that. I don't want to have to update all the places that have pointers to my system. We have we have fairly relatively substantial anonymous FTP archives on the system and some other things like that. Nothing like what UNet has, but you know, we have 100 megabytes or so of stuff we give away to the net. And we don't want to have to tell everybody the difference. But people make assumptions about it. You know, and this is one of the reasons I think that geographic naming in geographic information in host names is actually a pretty bad idea, because things move around. You know,
names are not addresses, at least in theory, and I think you've proved that.
Right. And Dave Clark wrote a wonderful RFC on that years ago, and everybody seems to forget about it. You know, he talks about the difference between names, addresses, and routes. And there's very important differences, and people seem to get confused about that all the time, and they just keep making the same mistakes over and over again. So part of the reason why I keep the name now is also sort of as an existence proof of why it's bad to do that sort of thing. You know, I'm involved in a tape tree. This is a thing where somebody goes and gets a bootleg tape with the band's permission off a soundboard at a concert, you know. And this band happens to be Fish from Vermont, you know. And so somebody got a tape with the band's permission, and they're organizing this tree where they actually have a DAT tape of a show, and then several people send them blank DATs, and they make masters of that, and then those people have five or six people under them who send them blank tapes, you know, and you do this tree, right? And everybody only has to make five or six copies, but hundreds of people can actually get copies of this show, and that's a pretty cool thing. Well, they ignored my U.S. mail address, and they assumed I was in California because of my email address, and they organized this based on states, you know, to try to minimize the delay in, for tapes to actually travel in the mail. So it's not a big deal, but it's one of the examples of how people will make assumptions based on information they see in a domain name that's actually out of date or invalid. You know, and something that's misleading. You know,
the old saying, don't judge a domain by its name.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. This has been Geek of the Week. We've been talking to John Romke. Thanks a lot, John.
Sure. Thank you.
This has been Geek of the Week, brought to you by Sun Microsystems and by O'Reilly & Associates. To purchase an audio cassette or audio CD of this program, send electronic mail to radio@ora.com. Internet Talk Radio. The medium is the message.